Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
In 1863, the Negro was freed from the bondage of physical slavery through the Emancipation Proclamation signed by Abraham Lincoln. But the Negro was not given any land to make that freedom meaningful.
Well, that, of course, is the voice of civil rights icon, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Before he died, he spoke about the issue of reparations for the descendants of slaves in America. Last year on Capitol Hill, a high-profile hearing on reparations was also held, but so far there has been no movement by federal lawmakers about this issue. Well, tonight, ahead of MLK Day, we are discussing the idea of reparations. My guests are Dr. Greg Carr, chair of Howard University's Afro-American Studies Department, and Dr. Dana Williams, professor of African-American Literature and interim dean of Howard University's Graduate School. Lines are open. Let's talk about it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Williams, Dr. Carr, hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, brother.
That's right. What a topic to start off the new year with you two. Okay. Dr. Carr, 40 acres and a mule. Where are my 40 acres and a mule? How would you define reparations in 2020 for African Americans?
Well, as I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, we're going to get together on Monday to talk about that at Metropolitan AME Church with Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who's a member of the National African American Reparations Council. One of the constituent members of that council is the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparation, and they define it with five simple terms. One, people or nationhood. We have been injured as a people and as a nation. So reparations means restoring our sense of self, collective self. Two is education. Where is the investment in the education of our people collectively? Three is health. We see the disparity, the health disparities in this country. And so reparations means restoring the health of our people. Four, criminal punishment. Now, criminal justice doesn't exist for us. So incarceration, mass incarceration, deprivation of voting rights, so forth and so on. Reparations looks like restoring us to wholeness. And then finally is the one probably attracts the most attention. That's wealth. That's what Dr. King is talking about. There was never a wealth transfer at 40 acres and a mule, as we'll probably talk about as well. Dr. Williams might get into this. We had our freshman in COAS, College of Arts and Sciences, read a book talking about what happened during that period of Civil War and Reconstruction. We never got wealth in the form of land, and we were never paid for our labor. So reparations looks like giving us some form of wealth equity in this country, and there are many ways we can achieve that.
Where is our land? What happened?
Well, our land is in Africa, but once we were taken.
that was a loaded question.
No, brother. Everybody here is on stolen land. We asked the Native Americans. But once we were here, of course, our land was a military exercise during the Civil War. We know that the Union Army trying to win the war in places like South Carolina and Mississippi gave land to the enslaved Africans who were already working that land as a way to deprive the Southerners of that land. The problem is, after the war was over and they started making up, they let those former owners return to their land. And so Africans moved from not owning any land in the places they had worked to working on land that still didn't belong to them. And that's when you get into debt peonage. You get into the whole question of people working. And now we think of wealth in terms of money, when in fact wealth is material property in a property-based society. So the answer to the question is, where's our land? It was a stolen land to begin with, land that was given us for 5 seconds as a war effort, and then land deprived of us again. And you know, even notwithstanding the fact that we've had some people try to hold on to some of that land.
Is the time now, Dr. Williams?
I think it is. I don't think that there has ever been a time when it wasn't appropriate for us to ask the question. And that's so much a big part of this conversation. Like, do you ask that question and do you understand that you have the rights to those things, and rights loosely defined, of course, because as Dr. Carr has indicated, the land does not belong to anyone. If you take the American Indians' position about it, that even they would not see themselves as owning the land. The land belongs to itself, having the ownership. But I think now is as good a time as any, if not a more appropriate time than any, to begin to ask the questions, not just about reparations in the ways that all people think about it, restoring everything that is due a person based on one's humanity is the thing that we really have to begin to think about. How do you restore humanity in a place where your humanity has been denied in some instances, outright denied in other instances?
We have seen of late very, very small examples of what some would consider reparations, others would consider restorative justice, what is happening at Georgetown University, for example. And there's still, and some would argue that the jury is still out about yes. how that works. And of course, probably the issue of reparations, the biggest example would be the what happened after World War II with the collapse of Nazi Germany and reparations paid to millions of Jews, and they are still receiving an example of reparations. Why is there still such an argument against this happening to Black people? Do you think it is racism? Do you think it's economics, a combination of that or something else?
I think a combination. In many ways, the Civil War was won by the North, per se, or the Union, but culturally. And that is what matters, as we know, in terms of the way that people begin to think about their victories. Culturally, the North absolutely, the Union absolutely lost the war. So part of it
has
to
do... Why do you say that?
Well, because when we think about how people think about white supremacy, think about Black people, think about race, think about racism, overwhelmingly, the kind of impulse after the Reconstruction period was, let's just all go back to normal. The Civil War was a blip. It was unfortunate. We lost hundreds of thousands of people, but the same people who were fighting each other and literally killing each other then went back, shook hands, and made up such that as long as Black people don't get it, we can, you know, be in good company or in company with each other. So it's a really difficult and complicated conversation, which is why I think it's really important, not just for the congressional hearings, but for us to participate in what we're calling through this project that has been funded called the Bethel 21 to begin to have civil conversations about civic matters. And that's really important to begin to at least be open to the conversation and understand the position. Most people think about reparations just like with money. How do you make those distributions? And there's some interesting and some equally silly conversations that are happening about it. And what we want to be able to do is have very serious conversations that honor our humanity and our intellect, because this really is an important conversation to have and the complicated ways that the issue is complicated.
It is a serious conversation tonight here on the Daily Drum. We're talking about reparations for African Americans here in the United States, the descendants of slaves here in the U.S. ahead of MLK's birthday celebration and observance on Monday. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Will, calling from Columbia. Thanks for calling, Will. What's on your mind?
Harold, thank you for taking my call. Listen, your guests have some very, very valid points and positions, and the issue of reparations is very difficult because this country was set up to disenfranchise us in every way. So economically, health-wise, justice system, financial, it works against us, and it's not an easy solution. And if some people talk about money, what figure would you come up with? Because we know there's some of us who could be good with money. Others would just fiddle through it. So that's a very difficult thing to discuss, but it needs to be. But, again, it encompasses a lot of difficult questions and positions. So I just thank you for the people you have on, and they make some very good points.
Okay. Thank you so much, Will. What about that, Dr. Carr? What about the money? I mean, Will makes an interesting point. Okay, so we give all Black folks $10,000 or $100,000. Well, if you blow it, or you don't invest it, or you don't, well, then, that's on you. Should that be a consideration only from the money perspective?
No, absolutely not. In fact, this is where it's very important, as we've heard Dr. Williams say, to study this. We've got a long history of laying out the infrastructure for this. Let's just turn to Martin King. 1964, a year after he gave his I Have a Dream speech, which really opens as a reparation speech. Remember, he says he comes to the nation's capital with a promissory note,
right,
and a check that's been returned insufficient funds. So he kind of, that's really a reparation speech. But in 1964, he publishes Why We Can't Wait. Mm-hmm. And in that book, He says explicitly, when dealing with this question of repair and reparations, this isn't all the money in the United States, if it were transferred as a wage transfer for stolen wage labor of enslaved Africans, would not be enough. What he proposes, interesting, you talk about the 40s, because that's when the GI Bill, of course, was passed for returning veterans. Dr. King proposes in that book a GI Bill for poor people. He said, because poor whites have suffered too, but their suffering is derivative of the suffering of the children of enslaved Africans. And the thing poor whites got in exchange for their suffering is this kind of whiteness that you can't eat. So what he's saying is, Dr. King is saying, what you have to have is a wealth transfer that will put a floor under poor people. In fact, what King calls for is the abolition of poverty. The examples he gives shortly thereafter, in fact, shortly before he's actually killed, are the examples through Operation Breadbasket in Cleveland. In Operation Breadbasket in Chicago, where he says reparations looks like black-owned banks, black-owned wealth, and then eliminating poverty. Why that's important? Because his lieutenant in Chicago is named Jesse Jackson, who puts reparations of that form in his 1984 and 1988 presidential campaign, and those campaigns worked on by one Bernie Sanders, who to this day is now calling for the same thing Dr. King called for, not a dollar amount, but the elimination of poverty in this country. So we're talking about a wealth transfer that would make sure that nobody in the United States doesn't have a place to eat, doesn't have food, doesn't have an education. So we have to stop thinking about money. Right, a living wage. That's exactly right, Dr. Williams.
What about education, Dr. Williams? Obviously, that is one of the things that that came up quite a bit in the example at Georgetown University. Of course, they sold dozens and dozens of slaves to save the university during the 1800s as property, as they were certainly seen in their attempt to provide some semblance of reparations, was a question about whether or not someone could be admitted without great scrutiny. And, of course, many of the descendants of those slaves were like, well, I'm too old to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I already have my education, so what else you got?
Yeah, I think it's an important question to ask, and I would extend it not just beyond Georgetown and universities, but to begin to think about what it would mean for fair education for everybody. K-12, I mean, we know the history of public schools has a lot to do with the fact that the literacy rate was going up so swiftly when black people were being taught in churches immediately after enslavement, when it became legal for black people to be able to read. At that moment, when the white public said black people will not have literacy rates that are higher than ours, public education becomes something that is a standard or a norm. So in that instance, they saw fit to say it's important to standardize the way that we begin to understand what it means to be an educated person. So K-12, if we even go back to that very model that says fairness and equity is based on public education, then underfunded schools that are overwhelmingly in areas where there are more black and brown people would be staffed better, teachers would be paid living wages, fair salaries. So even beyond the university, the only fair thing for me, though, if I'm at Georgetown, though, and if I'm an advocate for that, is no black person will ever pay a dime in tuition ever again as long as that university is open, because it is not sustainable absent the sale of enslaved people. So anyone who qualifies, and you can talk about that any way you want, but anyone who is at Georgetown who is not even a direct descendant of an enslaved person, because tracing that could be complicated or not, it would depend on it, but on principle, a person who is of African descent should be able to go to that school tuition free as a model and as an example of an instance where we're thinking about the fairness of education as an equalizer.
I want to drill down a little bit more on that education piece in just a bit. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about reparations for the descendants of slaves in America. Very quickly, let us talk to Sib. Sib, quickly, what's on your mind?
I'm not even going to go to the money side, because I'm looking at something that will have far more impact for generations to come, which is how about changing the history that's taught in school and teaching the true history of America that includes the black slaves that worked to build America, not just what they teach right now, which a lot of history has been eliminated. To me, that will have a far more reaching effect for generations to come. And you know, I mean, not just monetarily, you know, I don't want some money and some little benefit. that's going to, you know, just go away in a few years of college education or whatever it might be. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want no charity kind of thing. But to me, it's like, how about respect and dignity going forward for the black population, for, you know, for generations to come? And so the kids really know what is really true, you know, history, our history. And I want to say one real quick line from San Francisco episode when Fred said about his uncle being in war when he was a slave. They let him out from slavery to fight in the war. And then when the war was over, they were nice enough to let him go and be going back to being a slave again.
There you go. Sib, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us about that. I think that's a very, very interesting thing, you know, particularly when you're talking about the, no pun intended, or maybe intended, the whitewashing of... did you hear that, Dr. Carr?
Yes,
the
sir.
Whitewashing.
Oh, yeah. So I'm laughing.
The whitewashing of American history, yes, not sir. Just African American history, but certainly American history in this era of fake news. That may be a difficult mountain to climb. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. Melissa calling from Waldorf. Johnny calling from Baltimore, Zane calling from D.C. We're going to talk to all of you, so please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. And if you're still trying to get through and you're having difficulty, please keep trying. I promise we will get to as many phone calls as we can after 7:30. So please remember, you can hear this and every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment in its entirety via podcast on WHUR.com. Just click on shows and drop down to podcast to find the program you want to hear.